This audiobook is entitled How to Protect Yourself During the Coming Depression and Third World War. The author is Dr. Peter David Beter, a widely respected international financial and legal consultant and political economist. He has published several conventional books, including a current bestseller entitled The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, published by George Braziller Incorporated, New York. As a political economist, Dr. Beter concerns himself with the human element, the hidden forces behind the scenes, which in his view are largely responsible for major events. Based on information from confidential sources, Dr. Beter has made correct public predictions months in advance of such events as the resignations of Vice President Spiro Agnew and President Richard Nixon, as well as the vice presidential nomination of Nelson Rockefeller. Recently, he became famous as the man whose charges, publicly as well as in congressional testimony, led to an unprecedented gold inspection visit to Fort Knox by congressmen and newsmen on September 23, 1974. Dr. Beter's professional background includes the practice of general law in Washington, D.C. from 1951 to 1961. During that time, he won all except the first of the more than 1,000 cases he handled. From 1958 to 1961, he was also general counsel to the American Gold Association. In 1961, President Kennedy appointed him counsel to the United States Export-Import Bank, where he served until 1967. In 1968, Dr. Beter accepted the position of the major developer of international business for the Republic of Zaire, formerly the Belgian Congo. He is a member of the Bankers Club of America, the Judicature Society, and the Royal Commonwealth Society of London. He is also listed in the current editions of Who's Who in the East, the Blue Book of London, and the 2000 Men of Achievement, London. In addition to his other activities, Dr. Beter is now chairman of the recently formed American Patriots Committee. In this capacity, he is trying to actively combat the forces which, in his view, are destroying America. Dr. Beter welcomes inquiries in that connection and can be contacted at the American Patriots Committee, 1629 K, the letter K Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20006. Part 1, The Ruling American Dynasty.
My friends, there is in America a group of wealthy, very powerful people whose actions behind the scenes determine America's destiny. This group is largely dependent upon and controlled by an incredibly powerful family empire, which began over 100 years ago and which has grown steadily ever since. Plans and projects of this family empire are handed down and carried on from one generation to the next, making it a true dynasty. It is this dynasty, regardless of whom we elect, that now rules America. You may already know who I mean by this ruling dynasty. I have identified them in my book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, and also in numerous radio and television talk shows all over America. And from time to time, other individuals and groups also state who they are. But in case you don't know who they are, I'm not going to tell you at this point, though you may be able to guess who they are later on. Why not tell you now? Because if you were born any time in the 20th century, you have been the victim of a steadily building, powerful, yet subtle public relations campaign all your life to give the dynastic family a spotless philanthropic image, and especially an image that gives no hint of their awesome wealth and naked power. It is crucial that you grasp the situation you are confronted with so that you can protect yourself. And if I give you the dynasty's name at the outset, you may be blinded to the true facts, perhaps saying, who, them? It can't be. Everyone knows what fine people they are. Indeed, this was my own reaction years ago, when in the course of my international consulting activities, I was first alerted to the disastrous plans the dynasty had for America. And it was only the weight of more evidence than I have time to relate here that convinced me of the dynasty's true nature. The founder of the dynasty began his career with modest means in the mid-1800s, but became America's first billionaire before the turn of the century, thanks to cutthroat business tactics that by that time had made the family name a nationwide synonym for ruthlessness, greed, and corruption. Indeed, this problem had become such a liability for the dynasty that by the late 1800s, the dynasty's founder had begun the practice of donating sums of money to various charitable causes, always with as much publicity as possible, in an effort to make the family appear more favorably in the public eye. In 1913, he established what was to become the first of a series of tax-exempt foundations, ostensibly for philanthropic purposes. Incidentally, 1913 was also the same year that the special interests of the dynasty in Congress succeeded in bringing the federal income tax into being, a tax to which the well-funded foundation was, of course, totally immune. Such an income tax had twice been declared unconstitutional during the late 1800s, but no matter. They simply changed the Constitution by amendment, as they have repeatedly done since, to suit their purposes. From the birth of our Republic until 1913, a period of 130 years, only 5 amendments beyond the Bill of Rights had been needed to keep our country functioning smoothly. Since 1913, however, we have had 10 more amendments, twice the number in half the time. They always say the Constitution works. Of course it does, for them. Moreover, to capitalize on this deteriorating situation, which they themselves have brought about, they now have a surprise ready to spring upon the American people as soon as it suits their purposes. A constitutional convention in which our Constitution can be scrapped completely and a new one written that suits the dynasty. Quietly and probably unnoticed by you, the authority for the President to call such a convention has now been ratified by the required number of states under dynastic pressure, and now sits as a time bomb ready to explode what is left of our tattered free republic. If you don't believe this, just go to your library and do some newspaper research for the late 1960s and early 1970s. Returning to 1913, that was also the year that the dynasty perpetrated one of their biggest swindles in getting Congress to ignore warnings of our founding fathers and create the private central banking system known as the Federal Reserve System. The dynasty-controlled Federal Reserve is up to its eyeballs in responsibility for the cancerous conditions which are eating at the vitals of our economy, and I will comment further on that later. The income tax and Federal Reserve matters were bad enough, but the United States Congress in 1913 was vastly more concerned about the dangers to America of the dynasty's supposedly philanthropic foundation. Indeed, so afraid and suspicious was the Congress that the dynasty, flexing all the muscles it had at that time, failed utterly for 4 years in a row to obtain a United States charter for the foundation. So complete was congressional opposition that the dynasty finally gave up. They settled for a state charter when the foundation was established in 1913. Benefiting from 60 years of suave public relations, the foundation today wears the philanthropic halo in the public eye that the dynasty wanted it to have, contributing to the dynasty's public-spirited image. In actuality, however, the foundation has proven the fears of Congress to have been fully justified. After some initial projects that were designed to allay public fears, the foundation turned its efforts ever more fully in subversive directions, undermining in every possible way the natural resistance of Americans to their gradual conquest by the dynasty. In addition, the foundation has proven an ideal tool for interlocking the activities of their controlled corporations, both through foundation ownership of shares in the corporations and through service of corporate officers as directors of the foundation. The wealth of the dynasty has grown by leaps and bounds, and today their original foundation is only one of many that they control, all of which are used in the same way. They control over 300 of the world's largest multinational corporations, using hundreds of nominees and other devices to conceal the bulk of their economic might. For example, they control all the world's largest oil companies. And the trust-busting era, as you know, was only a temporary setback. Based on reliable estimates of just the visible wealth of the dynasty, published in 1921 and 1938, it is possible to arrive at an estimate of the dynasty's net worth today in 1974. There is every reason to suspect that the figure obtained this way is a gross underestimate, but it is nevertheless a mind-boggling $50 billion or thereabouts. This figure represents merely a very normal growth rate for their visible wealth in 1938. Yet, in their public statements, they profess to be worth only around $500 million, still a larger sum than you or I can imagine, but only 1/100th of what they are conservatively estimated to really be worth. Their bashfulness about their money is not due to modesty. It's because their power is most secure if the man on the street does not know how powerful they are. Even with all that I've said, the ruling dynasty's influence might not be so disastrous, except for one additional crucial fact. They consider themselves citizens of the world, not mere Americans. Thanks to their decades of internationalist propaganda, this may sound harmless enough to you, until you realize that this means America is expendable to them. Furthermore, the most consistent ingredient of their ever-expanding monopolistic drive for over a century has been to smash certain people or companies or countries so that their share of what remains becomes a larger fraction of the total. Through World Wars I and II, they brought Britain to its knees, thereby taking over the vast oil interests, including the Russian Baku oil fields and the Saudi Arabian oil fields, which had been owned and controlled by the British government. Now the nightmarish fact is that it is America's turn to be sacrificed for the further advancement of the dynasty. For three decades, they have been using various devices, foreign aid, direct and indirect, to build up their interests in Europe and elsewhere around the world at the United States taxpayers' expense. Our military secrets have been betrayed to our enemies in return for favors to the dynasty, and our economy has been bled almost dry. The crowning economic blow by which they plan to extract one last $500 billion profit before leaving the sinking American ship of state is the theft of America's gold supply and a resulting wild American inflation with the severest depression ever experienced in America.
Part 2. The United States Dollar and the Federal Reserve.
My friends, as I mentioned earlier, the dynasty engineered the creation in 1913 of the so-called Federal Reserve by an act of Congress. The Federal Reserve's name exemplifies a favorite trick of the dynasty, which is the deliberate misnaming of activities and organizations in order to mislead the public as to their true nature. The Federal Reserve is not federal. It is strictly a private central bank system controlled from the outset 60 years ago by dynasty interests. Nor, when it was created, did it possess any unique reserve of its own. At that time, the United States Treasury directly owned the nation's gold supply and issued our money. The Federal Reserve was therefore initially just a sort of nationwide coordinator of banking activities, something which in itself, however, greatly increased the dynasty's control over America's economy. The dynasty deliberately brought about the Great Depression that began with the stock market crash of 1929 by means of one of their periodic corners of the gold market. Every time they corner the gold market, a recession or depression results, its severity reflecting the extent of the corner. The reason for this is basically that by cornering a nation's gold, they make it impossible for the nation to back up its currency with anything but promises. Confidence erodes, inflation erupts, business falters, and finally it all snowballs into a depression. That's what they did in 1929, and that's what they've done again now, except this time they have arranged for things to be much worse, with scarcity and skyrocketing inflation even during the Depression period itself. In 1935, with America in the depths of depression, the dynasty brought the gold back that they had spirited abroad several years before, selling it as foreign gold to the United States government at the newly raised price of $35 an ounce. Earlier in 1934, they had also arranged for President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, whom they controlled utterly, to confiscate the gold owned by individual United States citizens, paying them the old price of $20.67 an ounce. Then, incredibly, they induced President Roosevelt to turn over the nation's gold supply to the Federal Reserve System as a gift, if you please. This he obediently did, not even getting a receipt. These transactions were originally accomplished by presidential executive order, being ratified afterward by the Congressional Gold Reserve Act of 1934. To give the dynasty their due, it should be noted that they always planned their moves far in advance. So when they named their central bank system the Federal Reserve in 1913, perhaps they were simply looking ahead to the mid-depression transactions which were planned for 20 years later, by which the federal gold supply became the reserve of their private bank. 1934 also marked the beginning of a slow deterioration of the United States dollar, since we went off the true gold standard by having our dollars no longer convertible to gold. In 1965, the process intensified. That was the year in which our traditional 90% silver coins were replaced by the cladded copper funny money of today, and silver certificates were called in. In 1968, the two-tier gold system was established by an international agreement engineered by the dynasty. Up till then, the price of gold was fixed at the official price of $35 per ounce. The two-tier gold system added a free market which would be used for private trading and where gold prices would move up or down according to supply and demand. Thus, a means now existed whereby gold prices could rise with interesting profit possibilities. However, the central banks, such as the Federal Reserve, were forbidden from gold trading on the open market. On August 15, 1971, President Nixon declared war on the dollar by divorcing it from its gold backing, unleashing inflation and also a stagnating trend in economic activity. In my book, Conspiracy Against the Dollar, I coined the word stagflation to describe this state of affairs, and it has since become quite a commonly used term in financial circles. On September 21, 1973, the stage was set for the full-fledged economic crisis we now face. On that day, President Nixon signed into law Public Law 93-110, whose most important feature was not even mentioned in the press. It took title to the nation's gold away from the Federal Reserve, where it had been since 1934, but it didn't say where it went. So the question was, where did the title go? That is, who now owned the nation's gold? Did it go back to the people of the United States from whence it came? Did it revert back to the office of the President? Did title return to the Treasury, which had owned the nation's gold prior to 1934? Since then, the Treasury has been merely a physical custodian of the gold, the Federal Reserve being the actual owner, that is, having title. Of course, there is no logical reason why the law, Public Law 93-110, shouldn't have said where the title went upon being removed from the Federal Reserve. No reason, that is, except one. By leaving the law ambiguous, they set the stage for a manipulative shell game which the general public could hardly hope to follow or understand. To resolve this carefully contrived question of who had title to America's gold, an ad hoc joint committee was formed. Its members, as the Wall Street Journal later revealed on November 15, 1973, were Arthur Burns, head of the Federal Reserve, George Shultz, then Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State, Herbert Stein, then head of the Council of Economic Advisers, and Peter Flanagan, then the White House staff on economic affairs, to the President. The rationale was that somewhere within this committee must presumably be the title to the gold. Therefore, the committee as a whole could presumably take whatever actions relative to the gold that might come up. The committee was orchestrated by Paul Volcker, then Under Secretary of the Treasury for Monetary Affairs, who came directly from the dynasty's inner circles, as for that matter, had all the other committee members. The next step came on November 13, 1973, when the two-tier gold system established in 1968 was eliminated. But what was eliminated was the old fixed official price market that existed before 1968, and what was retained was a relatively new floating price market on which it was agreed that central banks could now trade. Thus the world's currencies ceased to have any fixed relationship to one another, and the world was plunged back into the floating currency anarchy of the 1930s. Really, exactly the anarchy that the Bretton Woods Monetary Agreement of 1944 had been designed to end. The very next day, in a news conference, Arthur Burns and George Shultz commented respectively that the United States could now sell gold on the open market and that any such sales would be kept secret. On the same day, good, deliverable, quality gold in Fort Knox began rolling out on Army trucks, bound ultimately for private depositories in Europe. Only a little bit of low-quality gold was left behind in Fort Knox. The private international banking interest of the dynasty had already arranged for the gold to be transferred to them for purposes of speculation. The great gold corner of 1973-74 had begun. Their plan, briefly stated, is to let gold rise to over $2,000 per ounce over the next year and a half, once they finish cornering also the gold supply of the International Monetary Fund. At the current official price of $42.22 an ounce, the Federal Reserve gold supply amounts to about $11.5 billion, while that of the IMF comes to another $6.5 billion worth. When the price is officially repegged at the new high level, the dynasty presently intends to dump the gold back on the United States government for a tidy windfall profit of over $1.5 trillion, that is $500 billion on the Federal Reserve gold alone. By that time, the American economy will have been thoroughly ravished, bled white by the dynasty's greed for power and profit. Thanks to their decades of internationalism, which means putting worldwide interests of the dynasty first, regardless of the destructive consequences to America, we will be worse sitting ducks by far than we were for Pearl Harbor. Worse, because it was to their interest to ensure that America could win World War II and provide the means for exploiting Saudi Arabian oil, whereas by now they have transferred the wealth of America to other countries, including some who are America's enemies. They are bailing out, transferring the bulk of their assets to Europe, and building mansions there to ride out the coming storm in America. When it's over, they expect to return and make their domination over us complete with a new constitution of their own design.